especially things that are really on display, that are a little bit less about being utilitarian and a little bit more about just being for their pure beauty, giving them some breathing room, literally, like around it, it really does. Unless you're kind of crafting a vignette where what matters is the combination itself, that's one thing. But if it's really about saying, this bowl is so beautiful to me and look how beautifully it's made, then yeah, you're going to want to have some white space around it, some empty space.
Life is busy. Schedules are full. Money is tough. Marriage is tough. Kids, family, friends, work, housework. Ew. There is so much on our plate these days, and I think it's time we start taking stuff off. The Unstuffed podcast is a minimalist lifestyle and mindset podcast created to help you feel a little less overwhelmed and is designed to help give you the permission to eliminate any of life's clutter that's not working for you. You only get one life after all, and it's so much bigger than all this other stuff. So sit back, take a walk. It's your turn to take a break, and I will take over from here. Welcome to the Unstuffed podcast.
One of the questions I get asked the most is what my favorite books are. That's why I have taken the time to bundle them all together into my top 50 book recommendations just for you. If you want to download them, it's totally free. Head to reneebennis.com/books, and I will send you my 50 top books in fiction, nonfiction, money, mindset, and more. Hey there, it's me, Renee. Welcome to the Unstuffed podcast. Something you might not know about me yet is that I have the most comfortable bed in the entire world. Our 22-year-old recently puppy sat for us while we were out of town, and she went on and on about how she sleeps so good in our bed because it's so comfortable. And my son says the same thing. Every night before we tuck in our 12 and 13-year-old, we all pile onto our bed, read 6 minutes of books, and it's kind of hard to get the kids out of there sometimes to get back in their own beds. But what you might not know, and what they don't know, is that I designed it to be this way. I really wanted to create not just a bed, but a bedroom that felt comfortable and relaxing and somewhere I could drift off to sleep at night. And I would be lying if I said that sometimes in the middle of the night when I can't sleep, I tell my bed I love it. It's just so freaking comfortable. And I like to think of it as a really maximalist way for me to enjoy my bedroom space, even though the rest of the room is relatively simple. That's why today's guest and her message is so perfect. I got to sit down and talk with Zandra from Slow Style Home, and she had this message where she shared about creating a maximalist impact, even if the home is more minimalist. The idea of this is so amazing, and it immediately reminded me of my comfortable, cozy bed. So if you like the idea of having a simple home, but you still want a home that really leaves a big impact, even if it doesn't have a lot of stuff, today's message is for you.
Hi, Zandra.
Hello, Renee.
Hi, I'm so thankful. I'm so excited and thankful to have you on today. And I think we have such a great topic that we're going to intermingle and chat with and share with everybody today.
Yeah.
And before we dive in, do you want to take a quick minute to introduce yourself and tell everyone a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So first of all, I thank you so much for having me on. I can tell that our philosophies are very much aligned with one another. And I really appreciate in your show how you talk about being unstuffed in not just the stuff, but not just the physical stuff, but being unstuffed in relationships and with your own sense of yourself. And it could be eating, it could be shopping, it could be all the things that we kind of do to self-sabotage. So I just really appreciate the breadth and depth of how you approach this topic. Like you say, it's not just about decluttering. So I would say that my show, my philosophy is similar in that it's not just about creating a pretty home. I really care about the personal development aspect of creating a beautiful, meaningful home. And therefore, that's a big focus in my framework. I call my philosophy, or my approach is probably a better word, slow style. And over the past several years, I've created a framework for teaching people how to decorate, adorn, design their homes in the way that I have, not by copying my style, but understanding the skills that I've developed over the years to get here. So slow style is based on three principles. One is life informs style, meaning that your life, you know, you need to take into consideration the realities of your life. And for a lot of people, that means no white couches when they have toddlers. But it goes beyond that too. There are other aspects of our lifestyles that we need to take in consideration and should really kind of help us inform our decisions when we're thinking about how we want to set up a room and who's going to use a room and what time of day it's going to be used. And then the other side of that coin, I guess, is your life is the most important thing that should be informing your style, not trends, not style categories, but your actual lived experience of who you are, where you've been, and then who you want to become in the near or distant future. The second principle is that style evolves. And so allowing ourselves to let go of things that we no longer need, so that we're continually reflecting where we are in our life right now in the rest of our home. So in other words, don't make something a time capsule stuck 20 years in the past if it's no longer serving you or reflecting who you are. And I think this comes up a lot with decluttering, especially with the stuff that you feel guilty for getting rid of. Could be that you spent a lot of money on it. Could be that it has sentimental value. It means something to somebody else. And then the third principle is that ethics, maybe values, are style. They're part of your style. So really kind of bringing to light an awareness that what we fill our homes with has ramifications globally in terms of where that stuff is coming from, how it was made, and what it is made of. So I'm going to stop because that was a lot and I'm talking a lot. So I don't mean to hog this conversation because I think we're going to have some really great back and forth, but that's the gist of the slow style framework.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm just kind of thinking as you go, so much of it makes sense. And it's funny that you bring up the white couch. I know I did like a small TikTok video on it and maybe mention it in the podcast where I was reading Joanna Gaines had the Magnolia story, and she said how she was trying so hard to keep her white couch white, and she was so frustrated with her kids. And then she kind of got to that point where she was going, do I want to care this much about my couch, or do I want to allow the living to happen?
Yes.
And I passed a couch in Costco yesterday. It was a really beautiful, like, white couch, kind of raised. And
yeah.
It was like, look at you. You're going to be great for someone else, but it's not going to happen. So yeah, I love that reality. And I'm just excited to dive in. So, and you're kind of talking about, you know, considering where our things come from, which is something I'm not great at and truly want to be better about. So I would love to talk about that. But also the shifting of our personalities. Let's dive into that, because I feel like that's where I'm at when you're kind of saying we change our style as we change. I had someone recently ask me, how many pieces do you have in your wardrobe?
Okay.
And I kind of said, I don't even want to answer that right now. I said, because I'm kind of transitioning. You know,
okay. Yeah.
I've gotten to be comfortable to a place where I can look in my closet and go, my clothes are not feeling like me. I've made a lot of changes in the last year of my life. And it's kind of finding my new style for the new me type of thing. And I don't want to redo my closet every single year. Right. But sometimes I just get to that point. So how do you encourage people to do that when it comes to their home? Because or just my closet is overwhelming.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think maybe like our closets, I think there's a lot of good to be said about age. You really do. If you're paying attention to yourself and honest with yourself throughout the years, things get easier. I just decided, I'm 53, and I just decided last couple of months, I don't look good in pattern. It's too busy. I'm only 5'4". You know, I've had a lot of pattern in my shirts and sweaters over the years. I mean, texture's okay, but pattern, oh my gosh, too busy. And And so I think sometimes it takes us a while to recognize what actually works on us, because sometimes we want so badly for those cute new jeans that are so in style. It looks so, we want them to work for us. And then, you know, no. So I think sticking with some classics, you know, jeans and a white t-shirt, nobody's ever going to look bad in that, right? So the same can really be said of your home when you are thinking about the bigger pieces. You know, sticking with timeless lines, things that have had many cycles of trends within their own, you know, for themselves, they're going to last, and making sure that things are really well made. So that's the big stuff. That's a little bit easy because I think most people go, yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to get something timeless and classic for the investment pieces. But then what about the other pieces? I just think it's a matter of being much more aware and intentional about what you're holding in your hand when you're at the store. And it could be a big box store, or it even could be a thrift store or an antique store. Like, it's not, this doesn't apply only to the new things, but really thinking about for a minute, does it deserve the space it's going to take up in my home? Not just where I put it down initially, but also the storage space. And does it deserve the visual space? What when my eye alights on it, is it going to really make me happy? Is it going to complement what's already going on? Or is it just something in the moment that I'm excited about, like, oh, that's so cute and I want it and I'm going to get it? So a level of awareness of yourself. And is this for a dopamine hit, or is this for because I've been searching for something for a while? And that's the slow part of slow style that I think works so well, is that there is no rush. There is no finish line. So you are allowed to take your time. You're allowed to have a blank wall until you find the right thing, as opposed to filling it up with something that was mass produced, but made to look like it was actually done by a singular artist.
Right.
I don't know if that advice is too basic. That's kind of how I live.
No, I think that's great. I need to cover two things.
Sure.
I feel like you were spying on me. Like, about 5 minutes before I hopped on with you, I texted my husband. I literally said, like, how dare you let me wear high-waisted jeans? I just saw like a picture of myself. I said, I sent him a GIF of Steve Urkel. I was like, they're not meant for me. Why didn't you stop me?
That's so
I know
funny.
You laughed when I put them on, but like you should have tried harder. It's
right.
Just,
that was your job and you failed.
Yes. I'm a short person and I have a bigger top. I'm like a big top heavy. I got a bigger chest. So it's like, it was just like boob and bottom. And it is just not a good look. And he didn't stop me. I'm like, I'm returning all the ones I just bought. I love the idea of them, but
I had to let go. Right, right.
So I just had to get that out. I'm like, oh my gosh, that was too.
That is funny.
Spot on.
That is very funny. Yes.
But I also did that when we moved into our smaller home, when we downsized. I remember just trying to let myself be comfortable, like you said, with the blank space. We had this giant space. Our TV was mounted. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't really have anything under there, and I knew exactly what I wanted, and okay. I would not buy anything that wasn't exactly what I wanted in exactly good. The price range I wanted.
Yeah, great.
So it looked weird for a while.
Yeah. And that's okay. Exactly. That's okay.
Right.
I think that the tendency to want to fill up our homes, especially for moving, there's a sense of, I want to be done. And the reason I want to be done is because I want to relax, because moving is stressful and buying furniture is stressful. But buying art, buying stuff for the walls tends to stress people out a lot, because I think we have a lot of misconceptions about how to buy art in our culture. And so I get the tendency to say, I just want to be done. I just want it to be, you know, I don't want to have to think about it again. But I sort of push back on that all the time, because I never want to be done. To me, rearranging a shelf or moving a painting from one room to another or hanging a little embellishment on the curtains that wasn't there before or removing something, those are all practices of self-development as far as I'm concerned. Because in that act of doing that, I'm learning about myself. I'm paying attention to what I like, what I don't like. And I can't help but follow my curiosity and say, oh, why don't I like that anymore? When I get rid of things, a lot of it is about wanting more simplicity, a freshness, some calm. And then that means I ask myself, what's going on in my life right now that I'm so stressed that I can't handle a tassel that's hanging on the curtain, right? Why is that stressing me out so much? And then sometimes the tassel make its way back, like when I'm in a better space, you know? So I just think that this whole idea of creating a home, it's an ongoing process. It's a beautiful process. And it can be very empowering too. Once you realize that we all, I believe, have the power to create beauty. Many people think that only a select few are anointed with the creativity gene. And I don't have an eye for design, or I'm not good at X, Y, and Z, but I have a friend who is, and she's the one that always brings the cake that's decorated beautifully or throws the best parties or whatever. And I think that's really sad because we've sort of professionalized this idea of being creative and been led to believe that only experts can do it for us and that sort of thing, when it's just not true. I mean, being creative could be as simple as going on a walk and picking up a couple of pine cones or a feather, some pebbles, taking everything else off your mantle and just placing those things on it for the next month or so. That's being creative, and it's creating beauty. And I think that can be incredibly self-satisfying and empowering. Like I said, I think it leads to you feeling kind of good about yourself in other areas of your life as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. And I like that you said asking yourself, why don't I like this anymore? Like I said, I'm kind of transitioning through my closet right now. And I never thought to ask myself that. Mm-hmm. Like, why isn't this something I want to wear? Because it was something I really got intentional about being purposeful about what I bought and really loving.
Of course. Right.
And that's how I uncovered my style, was asking myself, why do I love this shirt? Why do I want to wear this so much? Yes. So now to have a closet filled with things that I don't want to wear so much, seems like asking the opposite question is a good place to start.
Yeah. And I think it's a nod to the principle of style evolves. It's a way of asking us ourselves, who am I becoming next? How do I want to see myself? You know, or how I want others to see me. There's this tension in style, whether it's fashion or home, I think, that's, it's sort of about being true to ourselves and saying, I don't care what anybody else thinks, but it's also outward facing. It also does signal things about ourselves to others, whether we intentionally do that or not. People, they start making up a picture in their minds about who you are based on what you wear or what your home looks like. And that tension, I think, is interesting. I think it's about finding that happy place where you kind of don't care what anyone else thinks, but you also don't mind if they see who you truly are. So you're not shying away from showing who you truly are, because that feels like you're, I don't know, hiding something, or you're not, you're embarrassed or whatever. And then, but not caring about who you truly are is a way of saying, this is me. And you're either going to love me or you're not going to love me, or you're just going to respect me for being me, even if we have. And I think for in style, I mean, I think nobody should have really strong opinions, negative opinions about somebody else's style. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, the big issues of the day. We're talking about whether or not you like a white sneaker, or whether or not you think white sneakers look like old dad shoes, you know? So I have your opinions, but don't make anybody feel badly about having theirs as well.
Oh, absolutely. And it's kind of crazy. There are people who really do care so much. And I think I spent so much of my life trying to avoid the opinions of the special few who actually really care about what other people are wearing or really care about what other people's homes look like. And it kept me from knowing who I really was, because I was trying so hard to fit all the molds for everybody else.
Right. And we do that in our homes, I think, with style categories. I think that we feel like, I'm going to pick a category that everyone's going to love. They're going to see that it's me. They're going to see that I've got great taste. And so they go all in on, I don't know, I live in New England, so let's say coastal chic or cottage coastal or whatever, right? And so they start buying everything that has shells on them, or they have, you know, they have a buoy, or they have, you know, I don't know, rope that's supposedly used for fishing, but they themselves have never been on a fishing boat in their lives, you know. And then pretty soon everyone's giving them things like, oh, I found a starfish with a, you know, notepad with a starfish on it. Here, happy birthday. Or, oh, I found a mug and it's got a starfish on it. I know you're going to love it. Or, and then all of a sudden you're kind of just drowning in this theme and you're going, wait a minute, I'm more than just shells and buoys. You know, I'm a much more interesting person than that. But I'm stuck now in this style category and I've invested a lot of money in it. It, you know, throw pillows are actually, they can be expensive, the nice ones, right? And tablecloths and everything. I mean, everything can be themed, you know, candlesticks and salt and pepper shakers, whatever. So I think that in the process of getting to know yourself and trying out different style categories, try to think about what about that do you really love? And then just pick one thing or two things or three things from that very particular style to kind of bring in and see how it works with your other stuff. Is it having kind of an interesting conversation with your very non-nautical themed bowl? Or is it, does it feel like it clashes? If it feels like it's clashing, it's probably because both of those things are so thematic that they feel out of place. When things are not as themey, where they're just beautiful on their own for their own sake, for their own craftsmanship, their own interesting color or pattern that they have, putting them up against something that's sort of the opposite of that or contrasts with that is usually, I think, a very interesting way to decorate, not one where you're going to go, ooh, that clashes.
Right. That's what I love that you said when you're talking about putting like nets on the wall or just kind of decorating with nets. And for someone who's never used them before, I love the idea of like someone who has, like someone who was a fisherman or who that was a big part of their life or their, you know, their dad was a fisherman and, and finds a way to incorporate it. It makes it so much more special and amazing and a storyteller.
And you can feel it, right? Yeah, I just feel like you can tell.
Oh, yeah. And that's, and I also like when you were, I don't know what you even said, but I started thinking like, I have really wanted this. There's like a ceramic bowl. It's made by a local artist up in Duluth, Minnesota here. I go into this little art store every time and I always look at her stuff. She makes things where they are ceramic, but they look like birch trees. Like, ooh. And I love birch trees.
Okay.
But instead of like, you know, if we bought everything that caught our eye, because I love everything. I love every single artist in there and they're all different. It's so cool and I can appreciate everything. But I always think like, I really want this bowl, like a bowl so I could display it. I want it to be and to get the love that it deserves. But if I bought just all the things that catch my eye, it would get lost in the shuffle of chaos, you know?
That's a good point. That's a good point. I think giving your, especially things that are really on display, that are a little bit less about being utilitarian and a little bit more about just being for their pure beauty, giving them some breathing room, literally, like around it really does. Unless you're kind of crafting a vignette where what matters is the combination itself, that's one thing. But if it's really about saying this bowl is so beautiful to me and look how beautifully it's made, then you're going to want to have some white space around it, some empty space.
My husband Tom and I have gotten in a really good routine of taking more walks together. Believe me when I tell you that I never thought I would be someone who counts their steps. But the truth is, I work from home and most of it is sitting on my butt all day and it was causing me a lot of health repercussions. So now I actually love aiming for that 10,000 steps per day goal. The other night we were walking and I told Tom that I loved the idea of having a step tracker because the app on my phone just wasn't cutting it anymore. But I didn't want a bulky tracker and I didn't want one that was connected to my phone because the last thing I wanted was constant alerts hitting my wrist every single second. I already work to distance myself from my phone because so much of my job is done in screens. When I was telling him this, I basically decided I was just going to have to give up the fight because I didn't think a step tracker that would work for me actually existed. But then I learned about the Oura Ring. The Oura Ring was something I had actually seen people wearing and thought was a really cute ring and didn't realize it was actually a step tracker. Not only does it track your steps, it tracks your temperature, your heart rate, your stress levels, so many other things all through the app. And the ring is really freaking cute. Plus, you can choose what color you want.
So if you're anything like me and you're not down with the tacky or chunky or constantly distracting step trackers that are usually on the market today, you can head to my site, reneebennis.com/Aura, which is O-U-R-A, and learn a little bit more about the Aura ring. And then we could be like ring buddies.
Right. And that's probably more my style. I love really making sure the things I love get the spotlight.
Yeah.
Rather than overcluttering. But that also overcluttering, you know, overwhelms me. So
right.
I know you were kind of talking about bringing maximalism into your home.
Mm.
Let's talk about, I would love to dive into that a little bit further. I've got a neighbor guy next door who loves decorating. And I went into his home. He's like, I know you're minimalist. He goes, but I'm maximalist. And
okay.
I love the way he's decorated his home. I would freak out if it was mine. So much dust. There's so much stuff everywhere, but he puts it together so flawlessly. He overlaps blankets on the couch and it just makes it feel so cozy and homey. So I'm curious as to hear how you feel like people can kind of include that in their lives, maybe without feeling the overwhelm. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I kind of want to point to this idea that maximalism can be defined beyond just having a lot of stuff. It can also be defined, I think, as having maximum impact. So if what you want is maximum impact, but you still don't want a lot of stuff, like if you want your counters to be relatively clear, so like you said, they're really easy to dust, which I totally understand. Maybe your maximalist moment is in a mural that's painted on the wall. And everything else is in neutral colors, but the mural is like crazy colors. So I think when you think about what's my maximalist moment, what's my maximalist impact going to be, then you don't necessarily have to rely on stuff to do that. It could be highlighting the architecture of your home. So if you're lucky enough to have one of those homes that has like all this great molding, or maybe just a fabulous fireplace, how can we maximize the impact of the fireplace? Well, we can't kind of face away from it, which we tend to do because that's where the TV is, unless the TV is above the fireplace. Like, first of all, let's rethink this whole way we are, or, you know, arranging our furniture in this room. We got to make use of this fireplace because everything else we have, we don't have a lot of stuff. And what we have is very subdued. So I really want to make this fireplace shine. So I'm going to rearrange the furniture. I'm going to hang a piece of art on it or nothing at all. I'm going to figure out where else the TV can go. I'm sure we can think creatively about that. And I'm going to make sure that the eye is immediately drawn to this one impactful thing. And if you don't have the architectural stuff going on, then, you know, I mentioned murals. I mean, there's all kinds of ways of using paint or wallpaper in ways that create that atmosphere without adding actual things that you have to dust. So having an all white house with one enormous sculpture that's just in the corner where the windows are, that kind of changes with the light, that to me is a maximalist moment because the impact is huge.
Yeah. Well, that makes so much sense. I like the idea of maximalist impact rather than maximalist stuff. And that's kind of how I really worked. Like I said, I like to try to focus on the things that I really love.
Yeah.
And just allow other things to be blank, you know, to kind of have, they don't all need to shine equally, you know.
That's right. Totally. And I mean, if you do like a lot of stuff, that's fine too. There are ways to, you know, curate it and display it and blah, 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 so that it looks like your neighbor's house does, which is actually really awesome and not just like a pile of junk.
Right.
But that doesn't work for everyone. Not everyone wants all that stuff.
No. It makes me so overwhelmed at the idea of trying. But, and you talk about, I don't know, like slow home, and I've kind of worked to do the same in the sense like, I mean, I think we all feel this way. When you come home, you don't want to feel panicked and anxiety. You know, you just want to feel a sense of calm and peace. And each room has its purpose. You know, in my bedroom, I try not to work out of my bedroom because I want my bedroom to be my place of total relaxation. And
yes,
even the main area of my house where it's kind of busy, I want it to be busy but functional.
Yeah.
You know, is there something that you feel like, or have you come up with things or found ways to kind of help people create those specific cozy, comfy, or purposeful places in their house, but still feel, you know, well-designed or put together, that kind of
thing. Right. Absolutely. So a big part of the slow style framework is really teaching people how to connect the dots between what they want to feel and specific design choices, decisions that'll get them to feel that way. And I think it's kind of abstract. And I think if you're not trained as a designer, then this is the part that gets a little bit like, oh, I don't know what you mean, but just, you know, if you stick with me, you will get it. You will get it. I do believe this is something you can learn. And you start off, first of all, you really have to kind of trust your own instinct in your own gut, which I know a lot of people also don't feel comfortable doing. So we got to get past that. But basically, start by asking yourself, what do I want to experience in this room? And I think that's a little bit of a better question than what do I want to feel in the room? Feeling in the room tends to produce one word answers, where what do I want to experience in the room tends to produce more of a story, you know, painting a picture. Give me some details. Like, what does this room feel like at the holidays? What does this room feel like in the middle of summer? It's a weekend. Is there lemonade? Is there a fan on? Do you have pets that are underfoot? Are you hot? Are you dying to get outside? Are you, you know, reading a book? What are you doing? What would you like to be experiencing ultimately? And then you've got this much bigger picture in your mind rather than just, I want to feel cozy or I want to feel comfortable, because everyone wants to be cozy and comfortable. It's not that helpful in terms of going, okay, well, what do I do next? That doesn't help me decide what kind of fork I should buy when I'm outfitting my dining room. So then it's about figuring out, okay, well, what materials make me feel that way? Is it linen? Are these all natural materials? Is it a woven thing? Is there a lot of texture? Is it very smooth and cool to the touch? So then getting a little bit more intentional about, okay, there are certain materials that really reflect this one feeling and other materials that go against it. So now I've got a direction with materials. And you can ask yourself the same thing about any design element, which is its shape, its color, its scale, its pattern. And doing this kind of over and over again will eventually get you to the perfect couch for your sunroom. And it's not by Googling best couches for sunroom.
Right.
Because that's someone else's idea of what goes in a sunroom. And also it's overwhelming because you're going to get 5,000 answers.
Yeah. Very cool. I like that because I need a new couch for once. Like, okay. Because I really am. To me, I think I've always thought of it where I'm going, what color will look good here? And how can I make it all cohesively come together rather than taking the time to think about the texture and the feel? Because that's what's more important anyway. We're going to be sitting on the couch. So
right.
I can find a color that meets kind of my needs in a deeper way.
Color is actually the easiest part, because there's so many people out there, even people making really good, sustainably made and really high craftsmanship furniture that can basically do any color you want. So thinking about, well, am I sleeping on this couch? If so, then I need the arms to be kind of the roll arms that are going to be comfortable, as opposed to the straight up and down edges that are going to put a crick on my neck. Like, you know, those are things a little bit more important when you're thinking about a couch, because like you said, you're going to be in it for years. And then, thinking about, well, what am I experiencing in this room? And is how maybe, especially for a big piece like a couch, you know, how is it going to feel in the summer versus the winter, especially if you live somewhere where you have seasonal changes like that? Or maybe I do get the linen couch because it's hot here. It's so hot in the summer and I want it to feel really light and cool and crisp. But in the wintertime, I'm going to have a basket full of baskets here. Even if I'm a minimalist, I will have as many blankets as I need for the number of people that are sitting on this couch at any one time. So if there's four of us, there's four blankets, not five and not three, there's four.
That's perfect. And my couch is drowning in blankets. So, I mean, as we're sitting here chatting, everybody, I'm like trying so hard to wrap a blanket around.
I know, I can see you. I love your blanket.
Like, this is professional, right? It's so chilly. But no, that's so great. And it just makes me wonder. Yeah, I think so many of us, I say, because it's me too, I've definitely struggled with this. I can't help but wonder if, you know, so many of us don't really take the time to think about what we want for our space, because we're Googling the best couch, the best bed, whatever it might be. And I wonder if that's what causes so many of us to just get sick of what we have then and want to move on.
I think so. I think that the cycle with which we go through liking something to not liking something is getting faster and faster. And that's no accident, because the design industry has, it's kind of training us just the way the fashion industry did with these kind of really quick short cycles where you have to change things out every 3 months or 6 months. And it's also kind of driven by the style categories that I was mentioning earlier. This idea that to sell something, you need to be able to describe it quickly, easily, and recognizably so that everybody knows what you're talking about when you say it. And so that's why we use things like boho or farmhouse or coastal. We do it because we all have an image in our mind of what that is. And so it's much easier to do a Google search on, when you're looking for a side table, on boho side table or farmhouse side, right? And so it's made the work of the retailers much easier. And so they're promoting this notion of style categories. And I'm promoting this idea of mixing it all together and not being in one style category, because then you don't get bored nearly as quickly, because you have a mix of things that you love. And when you move things around your house, instead of buying new things, but you physically actually move out rugs and furniture and try, and use them in different ways in one room than you did in another room, it's like giving it a new life. It's like almost like getting a new chest of drawers, because you're using it for a completely different purpose in a different room. And you're also seeing it combined with a lamp that it had never been in the same room with. And now like, oh, that looks really cool. I'm going to bring in that bowl that my grandmother gave me to put next to the lamp, because I want to put my earrings in it before I go to bed. And all of a sudden I feel like I have a new bedroom. So I think that is a way to try to combat this idea of getting bored with things quickly. I think people get really nervous about committing to something that's to them financially, it's expensive, because they're worried, what if I don't like it?
Right.
And it's a fair question. It's a fair question. But then, like you're saying, yeah, then let's take the time to really figure out what it is you want and what it is you want to experience, and whether or not every element, every piece of that is aiding that vision that you have. So if it's the right shape, but it's the wrong material, it doesn't get chosen. If it's the right height, but it's the wrong color, it doesn't get chosen.
Right.
And being picky.
Yeah. I'm a big believer in being picky. I talk about high maintenance shopping all the time. Because like you said, rather than being like, oh, this is good enough, I guess this is close enough, it's like, no, it's not. You deserve the exact thing you want. It will come. But like you said, you got to be slow. You got to calm down. You have to wait for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so satisfying when you finally get it. It's so satisfying.
It is. I feel like the joy of like, oh, I filled this space good. I got something that is the right color. I don't really like, it's not super comfortable, but I needed a new couch, so I got one.
Yeah.
That's going to, I'm going to want a new couch in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Exactly. Versus like, I still focus on the couch because I've been dreaming of a new couch for years. I was dog sitting. I had kids. Our couch is just destroyed backyard when it's done. That's the best option for it at this point. But I so want exactly what I want, and it's going to be more expensive. I know it, because I also love like the ones where you can clean the cushions easily and take them off, that kind of thing. So I'm going to have to spend more, and I know it. But I know I'm going to obsessively love that couch when I finally get it, rather than settling for something as a placeholder.
And you're going to love it for so much longer. And so the value, even though you spend more money on it, you're actually going to get all you're going to get your money's worth, because you're going to keep it for longer, So you could probably buy two or three couches that are not so great, or at least just not what you want in the lifespan of the couch that you do want. So you ultimately might even save money.
Right. I want a lifer couch. Like from here on out, it's a couch that stays. And I love what you said about the switching up of the styles, because, combining and mixing, like you said, the things you like, combining those elements that you like from each thing. Because when boho is not a style anymore, that's probably one of the styles I like the most when I see pictures.
Yep.
When that's not trending, all of a sudden your house isn't trending and you don't like your house anymore, because you build it all around that style, where the mixing and matching. But I guess I think a lot of people might have anxiety or worry that they're not able to mix and match if they don't have a visual.
Yes.
Do you have any tips or ideas for people on how to kind of figure out that balance? I know that's a pretty big thing, but
yeah, it is. And it's one of the main things that we work on within this Slow Style framework, because it does take some practice. And I guess I just need to say that right off the bat is that you are going to make mistakes. You are going to buy a few things that you regret. Hopefully they're not the really big things, and hopefully they're not the investment pieces, but they're going to be, and usually the things you regret are things that are super trendy at the time, but you didn't really know it was a trend. You just thought, oh, I love that. I've always loved that. Well, actually, you only loved it since you saw it on Instagram about 2 months ago, but you don't realize that you were getting swayed in that way. It's very hard to tell whether or not the trend that you think you love now, you will still love in a few years. So you are going to play around. You are going to buy a few things like that, and you're going to see how it goes. And you're going to learn about who you are and how you feel about trends as you go. My recommendation is, instead of buying the facsimile of the thing at, let's say, Target, and I pick on Target only because they have done a great job of bringing the price down on good design. They collaborate with actual real designers to create the looks of things that are very popular at the moment. What they're not good at, even though they brought the price of design down, they have not elevated the quality. And so you've got good looking stuff, but it starts to chip and it fade and unravel and all that kind of stuff very quickly. I get it. There's a place for it. We can't all afford everything all the time. But if you can afford to wait, if it's not an emergency, then my suggestion is buy the real thing that trend is copying. So, boho, you mentioned boho, rattan is huge in boho, woven, anything woven, search out a rattan little dresser, let's say, at an antique shop or a thrift store that actually is from the time period that the boho is referencing. It's going to most likely be better made. And so it's going to hold up longer, but it also, there's an authenticity to it that you're not going to be embarrassed about 5 years later. You're going to be like, that's a decent piece of furniture. People aren't selling rattan right now anymore, but it still looks good in my bedroom because I don't have a rattan bedroom set. I have thing that's rattan,
Yeah.
So buy the real thing that the trend is referencing. If it's hardware from the farmhouse, modern farmhouse, go online to one of these hardware salvage places and get the real light fixtures, get the real doorknobs. They're going to feel so good in your hand, and you're going to know that there's a solidity to them that is not, doesn't feel flash in the pan the way a trend does. And honestly, that's actually probably cheaper anyway for stuff like hardware. You can find really good cheap hardware that's if you like that kind of farmhouse shaker look, you can find that stuff, the real deal, relatively cheaply.
Yeah. I think there's so much more. When you're saying that, I think of these wooden bowls. A girlfriend of mine just said, my father-in-law makes tons of wooden bowls. Mm. If you guys want any, take them. And we just scooped
how
them
pretty
up. They are. And I've shown them to people. I said, these were made. I tell people, these were made by my friend's father-in-law. They're like, he made these. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I think someone said you could get, like, they have stuff like this at Target. And I was like, I know, Target's trying to knock off the look of
exactly.
But I love these bowls so much more. Like, I've passed them at Target and been like, nope, not worth it.
Yep.
Not worth it.
Yeah.
But I just like covet these bowls. And I have one, like you were saying, putting a bowl next to something for your tie at the end of the night, or your earring, right?
Yeah.
I put it in my bathroom and I'm like, I put my hair clips right in there and my chapstick.
I love it.
I do too. And I love forever. Like, if anyone says, oh, I love that, this is a pretty little wooden bowl, I'm not like, no, Target.
Right.
$7. I'm like, oh my gosh, my friend's father-in-law made it. He's like 80 and he still makes, I can go on and
there's
on.
There's a story.
Right. It makes me so much more excited to share that.
Right.
Versus like my Target find.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. It's fun. It's interesting because I think we societally, we've had the Industrial Revolution and then we had the makers the manufacturers revolution, where we were able to get things, bring the prices down on well-made and well-designed things for many, many years. But the pendulum just swung too far, because now we've got mass-produced things, but they're just not made as well. And I think so many people don't make things anymore. that, because it's just not, you know, there are other jobs available. And so we're impressed. When somebody makes something, especially if that's not their profession, it's impressive. Yeah. Which is, you know, and so, yeah, seek those things. It is impressive. It's very cool. It's very cool. Those kinds of skills.
And this is maybe similar on topic and sort of off topic, but I think I read the book Do Nothing. I'm not sure if you've read it, if you liked it, but she talked about how, you know, we look at old architecture and there's so much beauty and design to it and craftsmanship. And it talked about how we valued that craftsmanship so much more before everything became industrialized. And
right.
The craftsman couldn't afford to be craftsman anymore. So there's so much art that's being lost. And I think that's why there's so much value in, like you said, finding those old classic pieces, or, you know, those things that aren't just mass produced and made to be trendy for a temporary period of time.
Right. But I don't mean to make it sound like I'm not susceptible to trends. I totally am. I think I've had, you know, 25 plus years of practicing shopping. And so I know myself and I know what this feels kind of the moment right now. And I'm not thinking it's going to last. I've gotten better at it, but I still buy stuff that, like, I go, okay, I don't like that. Why did I buy that?
Yeah. No. And I'm a big believer in returning, because I do the same thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Or I think sometimes, you know, you're going, oh my gosh, I think this would look so great in my house. And you bring it home and you're like, this is huge. It doesn't fit this space. Like, I'm not good at that kind of, like, you know, I could see something that's like 5 feet long and I'm like, that'll totally fit in that 2 foot area, you know? And then I get it. I'm like, oh, this was a mistake. And then there's nowhere for it.
So
you'll buy things wrong sometimes.
You will buy things wrong. And that's part of that mastering the mix thing that we were talking about earlier. You're saying, you know, how do you do it? Because it's true. There are times you put things together and it really doesn't work. You know, it can go wrong. But I just lost my train of thought. Mastering the mix. So the other thing is, I bring this up because you that was a really good point about something is too big. It's like, most people, it's actually too small. Most of us buy things that are too small because they're cheaper and we are so conditioned to buy in price. So, oh, I want that beautiful rug, but I'm going to buy the 4x6 because it's like $500 cheaper than the 8x10. And that is the wrong move. So it's going to mess up the juju of your room when your rug is too small.
Yeah.
But that happens with a lot of things. So scale is something huge. So when you're thinking about mastering the mix, you're not just looking at, okay, well, does this rattan piece from that, you know, that came from Polynesia back in the 50s, does it go with this, I don't know, industrial light fixture that I got on, there's this great company that they go into like old Soviet era industrial buildings and they take out the light fixtures and rewire them and resell them. If you like the industrial look, you know, kind of thing. Is the rattan going to go with the industrial light fixture? It's not just about the styles. It's about the space they're taking up. It's about the shape. It's about the scale. It's about the curve of it. It's about whether or not it's straight lines or whether it's more of an organic shape. There's all these other things to take in consideration when you're kind of composing a corner of a room or an entire room that will help you kind of nail that mix in ways that most of us, you know, we weren't trained to think in those ways. So we don't know those little things. So that's something that we go over a lot with the slow style framework, for sure.
Oh, very cool. So for anybody who kind of wants to maybe see a little bit more or learn more about this from you, how can people find you? Like Instagram or your website, where can people kind of keep connecting?
So my website's the best because it's where everything lives. So it's slowstylehome.com and the podcast is on there. So about the podcast, but then also all the back episodes. Of course, you can find my podcast right here where you're listening to this podcast, which is also called Slow Style Home. But on the website, you'll see I just created a new quiz called Fix My Room, so that if there's one room in particular that you're really struggling with and you can't figure out what the hell is wrong with it, like, why is this not working? This is sort of a diagnostic tool. It's going to help you figure out the main thing that's not working and what to focus on first. So you just do this one thing and it's going to make a big difference, right? So that's what that quiz is about. That's free. You can take that. That's on the website. And then if people are interested in joining the Slow Style Society, that is our monthly membership where I teach you everything there is about the Slow Style Framework. And I would love to have people come over. Just come take the quiz. It's really fun. And you know, no other commitment necessary.
I think I need that quiz for my bathroom.
Okay. All right. Okay, great.
I'm like, excellent. My bathroom just feels cold and depressing. And I don't think I wanted to feel that way. Well, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Thank you.
And I know I'm going to walk around looking at my home in a whole different way for the day.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. As I said at the beginning, I just really love your show. And I love the depth to which you really talk about these things that are, you know, just really important to our overall well-being. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to have you and be able to dive into all things home because it's so important. So
yeah. Thank you.
Hey again, thanks so much for hanging out with me today on the Unstuffed podcast. It means so much that you chose to carve out some of your precious time just to hang out with me. If you aren't quite ready for our time to end, head to the show notes where you can grab my free declutter checklist, join my newsletter subscription, and connect with me on some of your favorite social platforms. Sending you so much love. Until next time.